Today on our show,
we're counting down the top 10 films where the villain wins.
Hit that, Polly. Welcome to episode 365 of the Countdown Podcast. That's right. If you went back and listened to us every day, you'd have a year's worth of podcasts.
Oh, damn.
You know what I'm saying? So my name is Wayne.
What a marker. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And today, a topic that has been long gestating on the show.
That's right.
Films where the villain triumphs, wins, emerges victorious.
That's right. Bad guy win. Usually yeah. Very bad. See how we go.
Well, you know, these films tend to be some of my favorites. I was shocked by my list in the end because I kind of ordered it, Wayne, so that the ones that were more impactful were higher up my list. So
of course.
I didn't go by the quality of the film, if that makes sense. Like, I went with...
Okay.
I mean, I did. It's in there, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's not like my number one film is the biggest piece of shit, but the villain wins, so therefore it was so shocking I put it number one.
You might argue there's a correlation between the impact and how good the film was anyway.
Yes, I did... People will be surprised by my number one, I think is what I'd say. People will be surprised by what is not my number one if they pay attention to this show.
Interesting.
Intriguing win?
Yeah. Okay.
Good. All right. Well, in that case, let's get straight into the show proper then. On the other side of the first segment that kicks off every show, it's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
The Recount is our mail room, but before we get into it, Paul, ask me something. Ask me why I nicked my balls.
Why would you nick your balls when you own them?
I wasn't expecting that. Okay, fair enough. Well, everyone, the reason I nicked my balls in the past is because I wasn't using the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0.
Ooh.
That's right. This bad boy has got ceramic blades to safeguard against the likelihood of you. Anti-nick technology, okay. It's wirelessly charged, which I always love. Looks like a cool unit as well. It's black, so it suits all of your accoutrements on your fucking...
Water-resistant, using the shower. Less mess.
Exactly. Just go straight down the drain, no matter how long them big, hairy-ass pubes are. You know what I'm saying? this week, Paul, we have what? Partnered with Manscaped?
We have. For this month, we're partnering with Manscaped to launch their new performance package and the... Lawnmower 4.0.
I just realized it's called package. Great stuff. Great stuff, marketing team.
Well, speaking of great stuff and marketing, who would you trust more in this world with information about what's good for your balls than the man who spends more time touching, feeling, thinking about them
showing
than my co-host?
It's true,
people. No one is more familiar with his balls than this man.
I mean, do the rest of you have a mirror on the bottom of your shower? I do. I want to see the view down there, okay? And the thing is, people, here's a little known fact which I've always believed in. The less hair you have somewhere, the less smelly it is. That's why some people trim their arm hairs and why women are just fresh smelling, whereas men are disgusting.
Right.
Okay? So you want to have less smelly on top of, like, cooler looking balls, cooler and more shorn looking balls, more manicured balls, then this is for you.
Well, the spelt.
Svelte balls, okay? Aerodynamic, some might say.
Aerodynamic. You look at that extra second or two in your...
That's right, man. If you're plowing forward, back, forward, back, you don't need no damn wind resistance.
Let's put aside underwear. But nevertheless, all right then, Wayne, what is the call to action then for the listeners?
Everyone, for this month, if you want to get your Manscaped package for 20% off, all you got to do is visit manscaped.com, purchase your purchase, whatever it is you need. They got a whole bunch of things, including ball toner, ball deodorant, your mama.
And enter in CDPC20.
At checkout. Once you do that at checkout, it just drops the fucking total by 20%. Yep. Gangster.
And free delivery.
Free delivery. So that's it. That's the whole thing you pay. And it's 20% off, thanks to Manscaped. CDPC20 at the checkout.
Perfect. There we are. All right, good. Let's get into then the rest of the recount, and that is heading off with last week's show, the top 10 worst Best Picture Academy Award nominees. Now, you may have noticed we're not talking about the Academy Award winners and who picked correctly.
Because I don't know.
This episode dropped or is recorded before the Academy Awards takes place.
We'll pick it up next month.
We'll talk about it next week. This episode will drop just after the Academy Awards happen. So there you are. Now, Nick Hemming said, the only header for this week's episode is Hot Takes. Wow.
I didn't realize it would be so Well, such a problem, Paul.
Well, I think for both of us. Now, Launching the Pilot podcast over on Twitter said, everyone sees a movie a different way and all opinions are valid. But Wayne needs to walk the plank. In fact, not walk the plank. He needs to be pushed to make sure after your choices this week.
Was that popular?
I did ask him what in particular. He said, Dune, Master and Commander, and Lord of the Rings, and No Country for Old Men. So half your list virtually picked
up. Oh, no, that's going to go not well for me on for that guy. Absolutely not.
Adam Malua, top level patron of the show, all around great guy, said, put a little gif up that said, one does not simply shit on Return of the King with Sean Bean.
You know? Yeah, I know the one.
Unless you're Wayne and you're a cunt.
I didn't see that. I'm going to go look it up now.
Gold.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Then, okay. So the final vote score. Bit of one-way traffic, Wayne.
I saw the score.
17 votes to you, 44 to me to make it, I think. Gee, I don't know now. I've lost 4-2, 4-3, something like that. Who knows? All right. It's been some real smackings for like these last 2 weeks.
By the way, thank
you
for you 17 folks who clearly just like me as a person.
Yes. Let's remove the cousins. 13 folks.
Or are related to me.
Some of the feedback. Jon Snow, or aka Julio from the Contrarians podcast. Great show. Do check them out. Said, man, as much as I hate giving my vote to such an irrational Gump hater, my very rational hatred for Vice overcomes every other feeling I had during this episode. Well played, Paul. Also, Wayne talked about my beloved Roma.
Wow, you know what, this thing, I was meant to fill this one.
Chris Yeaney said both had some questionable choices, although they had some reasoning, but how the hell did Wayne put part of Peter Jackson's glorious trilogy on his list?
I had no idea there were so many Frodo fuckers in our audience. It was real, I was honestly a big surprise, but okay, fair enough.
Well, speaking of Joey DiCarlo from the So Wizard podcast, another great show, said Forrest Gump is literal trash. I was 90% Paul anyway, and then Wayne picking Return of the King got me over the line.
Wow, I gotta go see that movie again. I'll put aside 2 days.
Joe Doherty said, neck and neck until number one, No Country for Old Men is awesome. Paul by a nose.
Fair enough.
The man I want to single out, who I knew I was going to get one vote only this week, but obviously got a bit more than that. Chris Sutherland said, Wayne with this Lord of the Rings bullshit, hashtag lost my vote forever.
Well, if there was such a thing as a Wayne voting block, Paul, this would be a problem, but there isn't, so it's fine.
Mark Ellis Reagan's, my hatred for the English patient made this an easy choice for me. So nice to hear, also from the So Wizard podcast, I should add.
I remember.
So nice to hear someone else who hates on the English patient, because that film is given a pass by way too fucking many people.
I really got to catch that
one. What a piece of shit. Josh Ragland, another patron of the show and the creator of the Countdown Scavenger Hunt, said, Return of the King, vote Paul. Actually, no, it's more like, Return of the King?
Okay, fair enough. I understand.
So you upset a lot of people with that one, Wayne. Thank you for overshadowing my Forrest Dump choice.
No, it's about time, you know, I got the finger as well. So that's fine. I'm all good, people. Thank you so much for listening.
Well, that's all that matters. At the end of the day, we do truly appreciate it. That's it for the recount. Let's get into it then proper. On the other side of this music cue, the top 10 films where the villain won.
The top 10 films where the villain wins.
Alrighty, here we are then. We've already explained. It's pretty straightforward parameters. Yeah, I don't think anyone can fuck this one up.
I was thinking that you've actually not turned off the sound yet.
We can just do that the rest of the episode.
It's beautiful, firstly.
Alright then, maybe I'll lead away this week.
Yeah, man, you go.
My number 10, let's go with a film that some of the listeners in the Facebook community, links in the show notes, if you want to get involved, did point out. It's one you've never seen, one it's called Funny Games. From 1997.
I thought you didn't like this one.
No, I do.
Oh, you do?
Well, likes a strong word for a film, which is basically about two psychotic young men who just walk from house to house in this rich sort of holiday area of, this film, I can't remember, it's Finnish or Swedish Nordic.
Oh, yes, I've forgotten. I keep confusing this one with the Keanu Reeves one. Right. There's a Keanu Reeves one that you hate. Yeah, that one.
That one's shit.
Yeah.
This is directed by Michael Haneke, who then remade it with Naomi Watts as the female lead in the film. And basically, these two young men take, and Tim Roth's her husband in the film, take a family hostage, basically torment them, do terrible things. Mm-hmm. And the whole way through the film, you're just waiting for that moment where they're going to turn the tables and get their revenge. Because that's, you know. But this is a film which is an indictment on audience
expectations,
but also cliches. Like kind of tolerance of violence. on screen. Like, it's kind of having a go at you for just being passive observers, bystanders to this stuff, just accepting, like, yeah, cool, no worries. So there's a moment in this film where she manages to get free of her bonds,
yeah,
grabs the gun and blows one of the two guys away. The other one says no, grabs a remote control, points it at the screen, yes, and rewinds the footage.
The whole film gets rewound.
Well, back to just before she gets free, and yeah, they stop her from getting free, basically retie her up, and the film continues.
So I remember you telling me about this. I've not seen it. And I was like, how do I feel about that? Now, clearly the execution was such that you did not mind and you still like it as a film.
Yeah, well, I mean, likes a strong word. It's a good film. It's hard, hard to watch.
Yeah.
And the film ends with these two guys killing everyone and then going, where are we heading to next?
No comeuppance.
No.
Yeah. Very annoying, especially if you hate them.
And you do. You do. They are loathsome, awful, awful people. And the same. And I thought when they did the American remake, they'll bitch out. There's no way they're going to kill Naomi Watts that way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because she's the last one left, the mother. And they get a little sailboat on the lake that they're all around.
So this has been remade?
Yeah.
And did you see them both?
Yeah.
And?
It's virtually shot for shot.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And but
just in English language.
But the original foreign language one is better.
No, yes, because it came first, but no, because it's exactly the same film.
But they didn't bitch out, but no, they did bitch out.
Same thing happens. Really? At the end of this film, she's basically in the boat, hands tied, whatever else. They just push her over the edge, and she drowns.
Wow.
And they go, all right, which house should we go to next?
Damn. Harsh. Mm. Fuck this shit. All right, well, speaking of harsh.
We should emphasize here at this point, spoilers galore.
Probably should have said that before this episode. But never mind.
Again, funny games. I think even the remake was 10 years after this, so it's been out 15 years.
Yeah.
No one cares. But look, there's nothing that's ultra new on my list. There's a film from 3 or 4 years ago that's probably the newest on my list.
Me too. All right, cool. My number 10, Paul may surprise you because Paul actually recommended this film. I was lukewarm on it and I was like, let me just go give it a try. And then I ended up quite liking it and it's a horror film.
Mm.
It's Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, yeah. On my honorable mentions, I only left it off for a very vague reason, but you know, you have to reason.
Yeah, no, you do that. You put your own parameters in. I liked this one because, well, first of all, it's about Chris Hemsworth and a bunch of other people. And, you know, it's a riff on horror movie tropes. These five friends, they head to the country. They spend a weekend in a creepy abandoned cavern. What they don't know is that they're actually human sacrifices in an annual ritual. And the ritual has rules that happen, and it's controlled by this company that essentially does allow creatures to come out and kill these motherfuckers. But it starts in like an office, and I'm like, what? This is awesome. And it was really, really cool. Now, I know it's a Joss Whedon joint and all that sort of thing, and it's not nice to look at anymore, but I don't care about stuff. This is all about the art, okay? I actually liked it very much, and at the end, of course, it ends on a note which, well, basically, the despair is real. Like, the good guys lose. They are not triumphant. The monsters come, and the end of the world, I believe, is actually.
Well, that's right. So the whole thing is about organizing an appeasement to this demon. If it rises up, we'll destroy the world.
Yeah.
And so that's why these poor kids are targeted. I say kids, young adults are targeted, and they have to die to appease the bloodlust of this demon god, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The reason I didn't put this on the list, and I get, like I said, it's very vague, and I'm totally happy with it on the list. I'm pleased, actually, that you mentioned this one, is that, technically speaking, the office drones all die as well. And so, in a way, what's his name? Fran Kranz's character, Stoner character, not being the last death.
Yeah.
Kind of wins.
Oh, okay.
I'm being very vague, though. Like, I'm not having a go. Not having a go.
No, I get it. In this instance, putting it on this list, the inference is that
end of the day,
the demon is the
villain. Yeah, end of the day.
Yeah.
The world dies.
Yeah, the good people didn't win. So, yeah. But absolutely, yeah, cool. No, all right, nice. Well, I know you love that one, so all good.
Yeah.
What is your number 9, son?
My number 9 is a film, Wayne, which got you in some trouble last week, and I do not understand your disdain for it. It's No Country for Old Men.
Piece of shit.
Just giving you a chance to double down on that hatred.
You know, bitch, please. You know how this will go, right? Yes, look, I understand it has its merits, but a couple things.
Oh, do you? That's nice of you.
A couple of things just pissed me off enough to go, you know what? Fuck this. So there you are. But of course, you love it, Paul.
Look, I do. I think as much as anyone, the last 15, 20 minutes of film, I'm scratching my head going, what is this about?
That's what pissed me
off.
The
darkness and the light, whatever else. But I have no problem with Anton Chigurh, the character who played by Javier Bardem, who comes through and just is trying to kill the people who stole the Mexican cartel's money, i.e. Josh Brolin's character is chasing through the film and flicks a coin and, you know, lands the wrong way, he kills you, doesn't land the wrong way, he lets you live.
Yeah.
or does land the right way, lets you live.
His whole point being that everything is chance.
The fact that he can disappear and whatever else, and none of that bothers me. And Tommy Lee Jones chasing him and blah, blah, blah. I just think it's a ballsy move from this kind of film, which, again, apparently it's accurate to the book written by Cormac McCarthy.
Any chance you've read that book?
No, I haven't.
No, okay. No. Yeah, look, I mean, I'd love to see what that scene with the... Yeah, well, we talked about this a lot, but the hotel scene, I want an explanation for that. And yes, and there was the movie. But there you are. Strokes for folks, people.
Indeed. So, couldn't leave it off this list. I'm sorry, Wayne. I know it's not your fave.
All right, then. My number 9, people, is a film that I've always actually kind of admired from afar. I've seen it about 3 or 4 times. It's The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Right.
Now, this is Matt Damon before he had the profile he has now. And back in this show, which I'd never heard of before, I understand that he's
written by Patricia Highsmith.
I think so. I'm going to hear, but I think so. Please confirm.
Who also wrote a movie that I'm going to talk about, a book of which made a movie.
Oh, really?
I'm going to talk about very shortly called Deep Water.
Okay.
I don't mean today. I mean in a future episode.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. Matt Damon plays what is essentially a chameleonic kind of dude who ends up in Europe, and he gloms onto sort of Jude Law, who's a cool guy, and then he's, you know, Jude Law's hanging out with Gwyneth Paltrow, and then like Philip Seymour Hoffman comes in. Basically, he's a serial killer, or he turns into a serial killer. It's quite the cat and mouse, but it's a very European, Eurocentric, beautiful kind of show. And what it does is it's actually a linear like descent into a very, very desperate place where Matt Damon is killing all these people, and he has to kill everyone and everyone, anyone he comes across, because he keeps having to cover up all of his crimes, and it goes down, down, down. And at the very end, he doesn't actually get found out, but what you do get is him sitting in a boat in a fucking bedroom, just kind of going, oh, this is my life now. At some stage, it is going to go down, but he does not get his comeuppance. And for some reason, I liked the film as a result of that. I was sitting there going, wow, that's really dark, but not in a way that upset me. Let's get lunch. It was that kind of a thing. That's what I mean. Like, it gave me all the things I wanted, like, oh, okay, but didn't piss me off. So, great movie, The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Right. Surprise, I have to say, was not expecting that one. But yes, Patricia Highsmith wrote both the Ripley trilogy and Deep Water. My number 8 is a film that comes out in the lifetime of this podcast.
Okay.
It's one we watched together, which you were like, fuck this, early on in the film as we were sitting in the cinema together.
Oh.
And you weren't alone, as the gentleman to my right also made words to that effect very early on. It's Hereditary.
Yeah, that one really ended like a motherfucker, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Right. So spoilers for a film which is, what, 3 years old? 4 years old?
Damn, it was wrong.
4 years old. Here we go. So directed by Ari Aster, his debut film. This film follows Toni Collette and her family. The husband is Gabriel Byrne. And the film opens with her mother's death, and it's this really oppressive sort of exploration of
bloody
grief.
Bloody awful.
And then shit happens in the movie, and another, look, again, spoilers. The daughter gets decapitated in an accident.
There's decapitation all over this motherfucker. Yeah.
And it turns out that this is all about trying to create human vessel for a new demon to come back into this world, which was meant to be the daughter, but that didn't work out because she had challenges. She's intellectually disabled. And instead, they put their designs on Alex Wolff, who is the older brother. And this film ends with basically Toni Collette sawing her own head off.
That is fucked up.
It's
that
some really freaky.
It's so bad.
That stuff is burnt into my
psyche. I fucking remember
it
too.
Man.
I'll never watch this motherfucker again.
So good.
Yeah.
And poor Gabriel Byrne gets immolated. It just bursts on fire. And Alex Wolff's character just turns around and goes, yep. And you can tell he's been overtaken in front of this whole cult of worshipping of this demon. And the demon comes into the world. Hot damn, dark AF.
This is probably, again, I concede, it's a really well-made film. I'll never watch it again, but it is good. So yeah, good call. I actually just blacked this one out of my memory. Blocked it out there.
Which shows you how good the film is. All right, you're number 8, sir.
Well, speaking of my memory, this film is a movie that I saw in high school. And I actually mean in high school, when, you know, there's an exciting day in school for us, the old folks, where someone wheels in the fucking TV. You know, and like, we're going to watch a movie.
Attached.
Yeah, because the English teacher can't be fucked teaching that day. Yep. You know, shit like that, right? Yep. So they show us a 1988 film, The Vanishing.
Oh, wow.
It was a foreign
film. They showed this at school?
They showed it at school, bro. And I'm talking about the actual, like, this is some Dutch film, right? This is not
some Arnold Lynch's as well.
Well, this isn't the Kiefer Sutherland, Sandy B fucking remake.
That's a remake. All ends
this
happily.
This is the original, right? Which I had never heard of before. And like, we're going to watch a Dutch film. And I'm like, fuck you. Anyway, Turns out it's some twisted-ass thriller. Follows a man whose girlfriend goes missing while they're on holiday, and he spends years obsessing over her disappearance.
As like, you would.
As you would, right? Eventually, the man's contacted by this kidnapper dude who tells him, I'm the guy who fucking disappeared your woman, and I'll reveal what happened to her if only you allow me to let you experience it yourself. And
what fuckwit would say yes?
Well, what you would probably do, Paul, because it's a thing that it's, you'd say, all right, I'll go
I mean, police.
Yeah, I'd go, yeah, you're right. You probably should do that.
Yeah.
Didn't really think about that. He could have just not drank the coffee
yep.
and not fucking passed out mm-hmm. and not found himself, spoilers,
for a buried. 34 years old.
That's right. Buried alive. You end up this movie with him going, you know, drink the coffee and then I'll show you what I did with your wife and whatever. And he just passes out. And then he wakes up in a fucking buried alive and he's screaming. And that's the end of the film, which means you now know that this old motherfucker not only buried his wife or his girlfriend alive.
And however many other people.
And then he does it to this guy. And then the film just ends like that. Now, the Hollywood version does not end like
this. No, Kiefer Sutherland gets out somehow.
What happens was like the girl who was in Almost Perfect, that girl, she's his actual girlfriend that jilted him. She leaves a message on his, she calls his phone to say something after she's broken up with him. And she's like, he's re-recording a message and he actually hears someone, the guy come in and she figures out that he's away with some guy. So she tracks him down and actually saves him and digs him up before he dies.
So who, does Sandra Bullock die?
Sandra Bullock did die, yeah. She's the girl at the beginning. She's just gone. That's it. So, yeah. So, yeah, it's a hell of a show, man. The Vanishing.
Did they catch the murderer then in the Hollywood version?
Yeah, it was Jeff Bridges. And he... yes, they do. I think they kill him, actually. They have to kill him. So he gets killed somehow.
Yeah.
But you know what? And I got to say, that made me so much happier.
Well, of course it did, but that's not the point.
Well...
Which one lingers in your memory more? Which one has an impact?
Well, I was like,
which one is better in terms of the real world sort of process of this?
Yeah, when I was 14 and I saw the first one, I was thinking about it for days, and even the chicks in the class were like, holy shit, I can't believe that.
I can't believe they showed that at school. Which teacher showed that?
It was Miss Kerrigan.
Really?
I know it was.
Straight-laced, God is great, Miss Kerrigan?
Yes, I'm sure it was curriculum or something.
Didn't she become Mrs. Cox or something?
Yes, she did. Yeah. There you are. Ironically... Wouldn't mind putting one there. I had to bully myself into making that joke. I stand resolute, motherfucker.
Oh,
God, that's great. Okay,
oh
yeah,
God.
That's fucking cool. All right, so now, what was I saying? Oh, yeah.
Who knows, Wayne? Who the fuck knows?
This is the same school, by the way. We did a school play in year 9. A little departure here. The kids who were in year 10, right, which is like, whatever, how old are you in year 10?
15.
15, right? In the school stage play, they're smoking cigarettes.
Literal cigarettes.
Actual cigarettes. And
this was 1990-ish.
But as a 15-year-old smoking on stage, ludicrous. It's a school-sponsored event. It's like weird. Anyway, back in the day, people.
I'll get you one better than that.
What?
When I was in year 6, my teacher... We were doing drama, and you know, back in those days, you just whatever teacher just taught everything.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's like, we're gonna do a hijacking of a plane.
What?
So we put all the desks to the side. We put all the seats like you know, 2 seats on one side, 2 seats on the other, like back, and the class of 30 kids lines up in the seats. He goes, what's going to happen here is you just randomly pick two people. You're the pilots. Everyone else is the 28 passengers on this plane.
Yep.
I'm going to tap two of you on the shoulder and you're the terrorist and you're taking over this plane.
Oh my God. First of all, that's awesome. I'd be like Wesley Snipes.
I got tapped on the shoulder, Wayne.
You were a terrorist.
I was a terrorist.
See, to complete the circle, he should have only picked on the Middle Eastern kids. But go on. That would have made it really 80s.
Shot the kid I didn't like very much.
Did you just like, did you walk up to drill him in the back
of
the head?
No, he jumped off trying to be a hero, so I killed him. And... And seriously, when the bell rang for fucking recess or whatever it was, we were dragging his body out onto the tarmac.
Oh my!
I.e. the veranda of our classroom.
And his mum was
visiting
that day.
As a warning to the authorities not to storm this plane.
Oh my God! I bet you came up with that. I bet you're like, we'll fucking...
No, I don't think so.
These infidels are going to go down.
I don't think so. This is a teacher going, well, here's what you need to do next.
He was directing it.
Yeah.
Fuck. If that was on film, this is gold.
11-year-olds, man.
So you already knew you had to, you know, you had to show like dead people to get the cops off your trail. Oh, that's class. But for what it's worth, The Vanishing has been a breach.
Sorry for that segue.
No, hopefully I love the segues.
Remotely entertaining. My number 7 is a film I expect to come up on your list, Wayne, maybe a little higher. It's a film that has Tim Robbins as the bad guy. And it has Tim Robbins setting up the aforementioned Jeff Bridges.
Oh, dude.
To be his patsy.
Hello.
Yeah. Arlington Road.
Arlington Road is the tits, everyone. Real quick, if you haven't seen Arlington Road, maybe skip a little. All right, yeah, go see that shit.
It's worth watching for a film that's now 23 years old.
Oh, yeah.
So again, if you're interested, you've seen it.
Absolutely. So, yeah. You know, I don't ascribe to that. Sometimes you
I do.
Sometimes you don't know what you like and I like this old movie. But anyway, look, I know what you mean.
But we're not going to cater to that 3% of the population should have seen it who haven't because they never heard of it. Because
this be your warning, everyone. Yes. But please, Paul, tell me about Arlington Road.
Arlington Road basically follows Tim Robbins and So Joan Cusack is his wife. Turns out these two are spies.
Not just spies, Paul. Terrorists.
Yes. And they are planning to attack whatever it is, and Jeff Bridges' character happens to work inside this. Is it the Pentagon? Can't remember.
Yeah, some sort of it's some government facility.
Very important government facility,
They
become friends, even though Jeff Bridges starts to suspect him at whatever point. They manage to manipulate him to the point where he drives inside, hoping to get help.
Yes,
but they put a bomb in the boot of his car.
No, until the second before, what the fuck?
And he looks explodes. Over.
Boom, that scene.
Kills Jeff Bridges, kills everyone that they always intended to kill.
Which was the entire target.
Yep. Tim Robbins and Joan Cusack walk away scot-free.
Dude, he just hangs up the phone, looks past the camera, and that's the end of the film. It's like, what the fuck? So this was, very big. Heavily inspired by the Oklahoma City bombings and Ruby Ridge Massacre. There's all the 90s people. But this film is the shit and it's totally on my list.
Nice. We'll get to see how high it is. Wayne, what's your number 7?
My number 7 is a Bruce Willis film called Unbreakable. Now, first of all, he does win at the end because Sam Jackson is the guy who did all this shit and he just tells Bruce Willis, I'm Mr. Glass. So it's kind of the wind. And Bruce Willis is not trying to.
Does the film just end with a revelation? Does anything else happen?
I don't think so. I think that's how it ends.
I've only watched it once, a long time ago.
A few times for me, but I still can't remember that bit. Unbreakable is basically about superheroes, and this is why I love this show, because it doesn't seem like it is at all. The villain at the heart is the unlikable Mr. Glass, Sam Jackson, and he believes in the archetypes that comic books establish, where there's a hero, there's a villain, and the hero, of course, is Bruce Willis, David Dunn. And what I liked about it is that it snuck up on me that it was a superhero tale, even though he gets mentioned all the way through, like superhero this, superhero that, comics. At the end of it, it became a superhero film that wasn't a superhero film, because it's nothing like a Marvel movie.
No, it's not.
You know? But this, if you think about it, is the most realistic depiction of that kind of shit. Because David Dunn's superpower is that he's hella strong, but water can hurt him. And you can't...
Does that play out shitly in this trilogy of films? Oh,
in the end of it, it was shit. Yeah. All right? That was stupid. But in this film, fucking fantastic. So that's why I loved it so much. Unbreakable is it made it legitimate to like comics a bit. Because my sister said, I saw this movie and I thought of you because I'm a nerd. Because I collected comics, right? And I was like, I really liked it. Yeah, so it was cool. So yeah, Unbreakable, everyone.
All right. My number 6 is almost appropriately 7.
Oh, well done. great call.
This film, it established David Fincher after the shitstorm that was Alien 3. But it just does so much right in terms of serial killer films.
Absolutely. I agree completely.
Not only do you have arguably one of the greatest combinations of senior detective and brash young kind of dude, Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt, like those two iconic together, you have one of the best serial killers who's killing people according to the 7 deadly sins.
Oh, yes.
The last of which is Wrath, which is the only one that hasn't been done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he gets caught and it's Kevin Spacey. And even that, back in 1995, was a huge fucking thing because he was at the height of his acting powers.
Dude, we were so surprised that he wasn't uncredited.
It wasn't even the credits.
And I was like, what the fuck? Is that
opening
Kevin Spacey?
Credits anyway. Might have been at the end credits.
So yeah, it made it cool, right? Yeah. So that was even better, man.
And they catch him and whatever else. And Mills is all like, we got you, man. We got you. You're done. Oh, no. He's like, I'm not going to reveal blah, 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 blah unless you take me to this place at this time. And they reluctantly go ahead with this.
Yep.
We get the infamous...
What's in the box?
What's in the box? Acting moment from Brad Pitt. I say infamous. I mean famous.
It's amazing.
Yeah, incredible scene. and Somerset saying, I can't even, what do they call his, what do they call his character's name?
It was
in control.
Something is, yeah, it's one.
I'm sure it was in control. Anyway, acknowledging that, hang on, we're fucked. Don't do it. Don't kill him, because he wants him to kill him. This is his piece de resistance. Mm-hmm. This is the final thing that will put him over the edge and be the greatest serial killer of all time. The cop kills me out of wrath.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. He fucking blows his head off.
Now, my only thing I had with this fucking film, right? And this is what I have with a lot of Hollywood films. It's like, dude, what that guy just did to you, to your wife, to your unborn baby, this and that. You're going to let him off by just squeezing off one in the head? I would have shot his balls off, then his fucking ankles, and his fucking nose. You know, I was like, this motherfucker needs to go down hard. And that's the only thing. I was like, fuck, but that happened. It was like a, it was an amazing show.
Great film. The guy who wrote it has written some other dark shit as well. I think this guy also wrote 8mm, which arguably one of the darkest films
fuck
of all
that film.
Andrew Kevin Walker. So, nice. Yeah. All right, that's my number six.
All right. My number six is Fight Club. Right? So Fight Club.
Thought about it.
I was thinking about this because it's a bit of an offy one, because essentially the protagonist and the antagonist are the same person. So the antagonist does, however, win, even though it's the same person, because at the end, of course, he actually manages to get all of his minions out to destroy civilization.
Credit,
basically,
credit.
Blow shit up. Yeah, credit stuff and stuff like that. So that is kind of cool. But I think why, because this is David Fincher again.
Again?
You know? And I, by the way, I just kicked out Gone Girl for this one. Just
thought about it. I did think about it seriously. It comes up on one of the listener feedback lists. So.
Oh, yeah. And this is a Chuck Palahniuk novel, which I actually love his shit. I like Choke. I like this one. There's a couple other things he's done. But it always starts with, you know, the old fucking group therapy. And he obviously has had a lot with him in his life. And this, you know, and but why it's just so cool is that I didn't see any of it coming. I didn't see any of this shit coming when it turned out. So, and also there's the subliminal teledons and cocks in the movie and stuff like that.
It's all for it.
No, but like,
that's why I get so high, ladies and gentlemen.
No, but you know, at the end, they're talking about the cock thing, and then there's like a real flash of a cock. It's long enough that you notice it. I remember just losing it at that point. You're going, that's really funny, because it's subliminal, but not really. So I just love that shit.
Yeah,
because
they were cutting, splicing in elements of cocks and whatever into kids' films.
So cool. Yeah. So great fucking movie.
All right, my number five is Gregory Hoblit's Fallen.
Ooh, Denzel.
Yep.
Nice.
Denzel, John Goodman, and this film basically follows a serial killer, which Denzel Washington's John Hobbs is trying to track down, gradually comes to realize that he's actually a demon, which is possessing humans and jumping from them.
Yep.
And decides to take it upon himself to end this. Is it Azazel?
Yes, I believe so.
And basically, it can jump from person to person. So it can murder someone and then just jump away. Or the person who it's in can die and can just jump to someone else.
There's a set like radius.
Yeah, there is a small proportion. So basically, Hobbs works this out, takes him and his partner out there, Jonesy, played by John Goodman.
Mm.
And they lure Azazel out there. He shoots Jonesy. I think maybe jumps into Jonesy.
Jumps into Jonesy. And that was harsh. I remember Denzel going, sorry, Jonesy. Boom.
Bam, blows his head off. And then he takes poison himself,
yes,
because Azazel's got no one to jump into now except for him, and which he does. Jumps into him, and Azazel recognizes or realizes there's no one, no other human to jump to. Collapses. End of film. They've won. Hobbs sacrificed himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. Except then we get the voiceover of Azazel going, oh, but you didn't realize, because the film starts with the voiceover. One of the only times this fucking thing works.
Ah, fucking Paul.
Yep. Only time it works where it makes a point and it has a purpose, and that is, bam.
Well, because you think you should be talking all the way through
not,
the movie.
Not if it's for this purpose where it illustrates something other than I've written myself into a corner and I've got nothing else to do.
Artistically, it worked. Okay, for you.
In this occasion, it's like, oh, you thought I was Hobbs the whole time? No, I'm Azazel because I can jump into animals as well, you dumb motherfuckers. And this fox walks out.
Boom, gets in the fox, fucks off somewhere else.
And it runs off to get back into a human again and continue its murderous spree.
Yes, I remember.
What a film.
No, it's a great film.
Gregory Hoblit also directed another big film which has a huge twist at the end where the villain wins. But I don't want to spoil it in case it's on your list because I know you like it. So
it's not a Matthew McConaughey film, is it?
No, it's a Richard Gere film.
Okay. No, I don't.
It's not Primal Fear.
Oh, yeah. That's an honorable mention for me.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Go. Okay. My number five is a Christopher Nolan film called Memento.
Yes, I can see how this one gets in there, but I didn't want to have to try and explain it and fuck it up, so Wayne, over to you.
Okay. Also tough. Everyone, Memento. Probably it was definitely the first Christopher Nolan film we saw. And It's about Leonard Shelby, who's Guy Pearce, and he suffers from a memory loss every 5 minutes. So it's a recent condition.
Antigrade amnesia.
Antigrade amnesia. Okay, there you go. This has occurred ever since two men assaulted and murdered his wife. Shelby killed one of them, but the other one knocked him on the head and escaped, leaving him with this new mental handicap. So now he's dead set on hunting that guy down. But of course, because he can't remember shit, he's using like a system of tattoos and Polaroid cameras and fucking just a system to remind himself of what he recovers, or what he discovers, rather. And it's filmed in both, you know, color and black and white sequences to show you sort of flashback, flash forward, this, that. It is probably, I remember at the time thinking this is the most ambitious film I've ever seen, because it's told not backwards, but in very almost
it's told in two different directions, right?
Two different directions, but like the effect that I thought when I was watching is like, yeah, they're telling the story backwards. And that's why at the beginning, the flap of the fucking picture is backwards and all that sort of shit. But of course, and spoilers for anyone, at the end of the film, you find out that Guy Pearce had actually found the guy, the other guy, and killed him years ago and took a Polaroid of it. But because he needed to keep living and keep having a purpose, he assigned that killer to someone else, Joey Pants, and just gave himself clues so he could keep going and find out and eventually find Joey Pants and kill him, even though he's not the guy who murdered his wife. And he's the bad guy.
So he's the bad guy.
So he wins at the end because he just keeps on going. He's actually not a good guy. But all through the movie, he's really a nice guy. He's a really good guy. So it's like, damn, this place is shit. It's fucking awesome. It's a really, really great movie.
A great film. I 100% agree. Nice choice, sir. My number four here is what people may have thought would have been my number one. Catherine Tramell in Basic Instinct.
Not even on my list.
Whoa!
Because Paul. Now remember, since the advent of Basic Instinct 2.
Yes, of right, course we acknowledge.
Which you say doesn't ignore, you don't acknowledge.
No, I don't. Right? I didn't ever,
so
I've
there's
never
no Basic
that.
Instinct 2.
I said I wish we hadn't, but it exists. Catherine
Fuck
Tramell.
Fuck off, you said it doesn't exist.
No, I did not. I didn't say that. I said I wish I could believe it doesn't exist. It's a piece of shit film, one of the worst ever.
I agree. Okay, but I know what you're saying here, and you probably know what I'm going to say here. Is that in the 1990s? Was that not 1992?
Yeah, 1992.
At the time, the way the film ends, please, Paul, tell us what it's about.
Well, it's basically about Nick Curran, Michael Douglas is a detective investigating murder of a rock star, and his girlfriend, the ultra-attractive Catherine Tramell, played by Sharon Stone. Long story short, people die. She's involved. Is it her or is it his therapist?
Or is it Roxy?
No.
Well, she looks enough like Sharon Stone that she could have been the girl skewering motherfuckers at the beginning.
The film wants you to believe it's Jeanne Triplehorn by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Until the very last shot where the revelation is there's an ice pick under the bed which she's reaching for.
We don't know she's reaching for
no,
it.
No, we do.
No,
we just don't want to because we loved Sharon Stone and Catherine Tramell so much, Wayne. We're blinded by our lust.
Here's the moment, everyone. End of the movie. She's in bed with Michael Douglas. It's the morning. They're talking about Rugrats or whatever. She's like reaching over.
Yeah, because he goes, fuck the Rugrats. So she doesn't kill him.
Well, okay. Yes, no, maybe.
Yes.
No, because here's what could happen, Paul. She then reaches her arm over and there's no, because you're thinking she's going to stab him, but then they just make out. Camera fades out. Camera fades back in. Japan. And then you see an ice pick under the bed. Now, here's the thing. By Paul's thing, he's saying like she reached for it, but then chose not to stab him and let it go. However,
not let it go. He agreed. I don't want kids.
No,
so it's okay.
No. Here's the thing, Paul. The conceit of the ending is that she might have just been stretching.
No.
And that ice pick was down there because Jeanne Triplehorn left it there for the next time she fucked Michael Douglas so she can stab a motherfucker.
Do you think? Here's my problem with that theory, right? And I want Catherine Tramell as innocent as the next person.
Oh, she's not.
I want Catherine Tramell to be in my bed as much as the next person.
The next person being me.
But the reality is, do you think if Jeanne Triplehorn had been treated the way that she was by Michael Douglas, she would not have just stabbed him through both eyeballs?
Unless it's her MO to kill motherfuckers like that, as is the want of a serial killer, Paul.
No.
I'm just saying, man. I mean, you'd shrink.
Yeah. Imagine a serial killer where someone wrongs them in the way that he wronged her. He raped her. There's nothing okay or sexy or whatever. Yes, he did. Bent her over that couch and off he went.
But
and she was saying no.
Was she saying no?
Yes, that's rape.
I'm misremembering this. All right, fine. But then that's even more of a reason to kill a motherfucker with us.
Yes, but I'm saying, why hadn't she done it? She wouldn't have waited for another half a fucking film.
She was thinking about it.
No,
she
would have just offed him.
Maybe I'm a fucking...
It's all Tramell. To say nothing of the sequel, which confirms it was Tramell.
No. At the time this movie was made, you're still probably right. Sharon had to have done one of them. And I know for a fact that's her ass at the beginning. even though you know it's not, you know. So I'm because I looked
for a fact, Wayne, from experience.
No, I've studied this movie scene by scene, frame by frame. Back in the day when it was VHS, people not good for still frames, right?
Scene by scene, frame by frame, by frame scene. Yes. Anyway, that's why I'm stunned it's not on your list at all. She is one of the great villain. Villainesses who has triumphed.
I totally get that that'd be on your list, though. All right, people. My number four, though, is fucking The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Honorable mentions.
Think about it, though, right? Because I think the dark side actually, they win on every front. Like, they fucking Han Solo
is frozen. This is going to win you the vote this week. That's fine.
Well, no, that's cool. I mean, I'm just saying, though, but like, did you remember how you felt when you saw that? That's what in the drive-ins. That's
not really. Cool, I don't remember.
I actually think that I was so impressed with the whole film, and then when it ended, I'm like, wait, so Luke flies away, like he gets rescued
and
from
cut
hanging,
off.
But Han Solo is done? I didn't know there was a third one coming out. I didn't know any of that shit. I was just like, oh, okay, so he's done and that's the end of the movie. And I was like,
that's the end of the whole thing, just ends there? That's pretty unsatisfying.
Yeah, but it's like,
so I get it as a 5-6 year old.
Yeah, 5-6 year old, so they go, fuck this shit. And then the Return of the Jedi comes. I'm like, whoa, is this the same guys in that movie that I saw? Oh, wait, why is one of them wearing black now? He got a green lightsaber? And shit like that. So that's why it became like this heart thing for me, because I didn't even know it was supposed to have a redemption, but this one went down in Sarth. So very cool.
Yeah, the reason I didn't have it here though is because ultimately it's a bit of an
obvious choice, Paul.
No, a fake punch. Like, they were never going to have the villains win. If the villains won at the end of Return of the Jedi, hot damn.
Well, you might say that one about another Return film, which I'm sure is on your list soon. We'll talk about it in a minute. But
yes, that's true.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what the second act is for, man. It's for the shucking the silence.
Yeah,
shit.
I see what you're saying, but I guess I was just looking for reasons to
completely understand it.
Not to shop it off, but to try and include some lesser known ones.
Star Wars fucker, I am. I fuck Star Wars in the ass.
Yeah, you're more of a Star Wars fan than I am, for
so,
sure.
You know,
my number three is a film which is built around a massive turn where the villain wins, and we had fucking, I think, 8 more of these films now as a result. Saw.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like one of your shitty-ass horror movies, but I know people
and this is the highest horror film on my list. Saw is the ultimate villain. I mean, yeah, there's plenty of horror films where the villain's defeated. Hooray. Oh, wait, last little scene, end credit sequence, during the credits, bam, they're still alive. But this film just went balls in like, nope, fucking villain won. These two dudes who are trying to work out, they're chained to the wall, whatever else. This, again, for a film that's 18 years
old. Again, spoilers.
Corpse in the middle of them the whole time. They're trying to piece together what's taking place. The corpse is actually Jigsaw, the serial killer. He gets up and leaves them there to basically die, having been chained to the wall the whole time, listening to them talk and whatever else. What a twist.
That's amazing. That's like in terms of when it was done and no one had ever done that.
There's no
before.
Bitching out. There's no like, oh, we defeated Jason, Michael, Freddy, whatever else. Last bit. Oh, they're back for a sequel. Nope. This was intended from the get-go.
So what, Paul, has happened now? So in the subsequent Saw films, because I've seen none of them, is the next movie, Saw 2, about Jigsaw doing something similar?
Yep.
And it is because I heard there was one where the key was behind someone's eye or some shit, and you had to get your eye out.
Saw 3, I think it's Saw 3. He dies at the end of it, and then we get copycats and fucking other blah blah blah, and it all gets diluted and shit and stupid.
Actually, now that I think about it, I saw the Chris Rock one with you.
Yeah, which is from the Book of Saw or whatever.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah,
but yeah, I know how diehards hate it. So
no, it was terrible. Okay, so that's my number three. Saw.
Nice. My number three is Arlington Road, bro. So. Back to you. That's how high it went.
Do you think we had the same one and two?
Look, I think we do, actually, or some variation thereof.
The order, then, is of interest. And I know the point I just made about Empire Strikes Back, but we'll come back to it. At the moment, my number two is The Usual Suspects.
Okay. Yeah, it's on my list, but it's not my number two.
Therefore, do the math at home. 100%. Look, very few films. And I literally remember being in the cinema with friend of the show, Richard, watching this movie. It was a nothing day in 1995, I want to say. And was going to see this film. Hadn't heard fuck all about it. It's not like 27 years ago was not like today where you can hear everything about every film. I don't even know if I saw a trailer of this movie. It's just, it's a crime thing. Let's go see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And no one big was in it. Well, Kevin Spacey was not big at the time.
No, Gabriel Byrne, Benicio del Toro, Stephen Baldwin.
He actually wrote the part for Kevin Spacey,
right?
Because he wasn't big at the time, and he didn't want anyone going, "What's the big actor going to do?"
Yes.
So you know what I'm saying? So it
makes sense. Makes sense. Blown the fuck away.
It was like the celebrated film of our youth in terms of that
god crime thriller. To totally bamboozled me. This, what's the word I'm looking for here? Legendary, mythical, underworld figure is under the cop's nose the whole time and playing them all the way through the film, and then the reveal at the very end. Hot damn.
You know why this film, I was thinking about this the other day, like the reason this film succeeds is that it makes you, the viewer, ask the wrong question.
Yeah,
so
you're
it throws you right off. So you're sitting at the beginning of the movie, fucking, what's his name? Keaton. Gabriel Byrne.
Gabriel Byrne.
Is like, you know, whatever. And then this, hey, kid, what's up? And then boom, there's a shot. But it's like, okay, what happened here? Then they flash back. And the whole movie, you're asking yourself, is Keaton still alive? When exactly was that scene? What's happening now? Who is this guy? And then while you're thinking about that, it's like, no, actually, there's a fucking Kaiser Soze. The one they're all afraid of is actually
Kaiser Soze.
One of them, Kaiser Soze. So that's why it's the shit. Now,
hot damn! Sorry, I've said hot damn a couple of times. I felt like I need to.
Yeah, okay. Now, this is my number one, we'll just say.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just put it together a couple little interesting tidbits for
please.
You because we talk about it so often. We know that Al Pacino turned down the role of Dave Cujon. I'm not sure if you knew that. So he was
Chaz Parmentier as well.
Chaz Parmentier, yep. And the
what why I said it?
The lineup scene. We know it was supposed to be serious and they were laughing, but they were laughing because Benicio del Toro kept farting.
Yeah, I heard that too.
I like, this is hilarious. Like, he just kept on farting 12 times. The director apparently saw this film as a parallel to The Wizard of Oz, with Kaiser Soze being the great and powerful Oz that no one knew, but the man behind the curtain was actually among them.
Whatever.
That's what he's... It's David Singer.
Whatever. I mean. No, Brian
Singer. Brian Singer, sorry, yeah. Fenster's dialect was all shitty Benicio's fucking idea.
Well, Brian Singer didn't rein him in.
No, Brian Singer said that he thought it was a joke to start with. He said, at first I thought it was a joke, but I didn't want to offend him if it wasn't a joke. Then he determined Del Toro was doing it because he said, all this character does is die. So I want to give him something. That's why he made Kevin Pollak say, what did you say? To let the audience know that we know he's hard to understand. Mm. So that still pissed me off.
It'll flip you.
And apparently Kevin
Spacey. Flip you for real.
Flip you for real. He asked to be in the movie before he even knew what it would be. He saw public access at some fire and said, whatever you do next, please put me in it. And the guy goes, yep, cool. And that's how it happened. So there you are. The Usual Suspects is the bomb.
Very nice. They're very nice. All right, then. Your number two, Wayne, to wrap up your list.
Yep, my number two is, of course, your number one, which is... Okay, it's Avengers. Infinity War, sorry.
Yes!
Infinity War.
All right.
Now, no need to say spoilers on this one. If you haven't seen it, I don't know why you're listening to the show. Thanos, of course, is triumphant at the end of Avengers by doing the snap, fucking everyone up, turning motherfuckers to dust, well, half of the people to dust, not himself. Then he gets away because he's got the other ring, which lets him go, fuck you, Thor. I know you stabbed me, but I'm out, bitch. What? Boom.
Can I now address the point that you made?
Please.
Because, yes, it is my number one. We just haven't flipped around the other way.
Go on.
Here's why it's my number one. Star Wars circumvented two films worth of baggage, if you want to call it that, or history. This film circumvented 20. This film went,
yeah.
Bam, 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 build up, 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 build up. Yeah, we all knew another film was coming. And I guess we all knew, therefore, and probably like audiences did back in 1980 with Empire Strikes Back, another film was going to come. But to do it in such, like, no one dies in Empire Strikes Back. Someone gets taken away and someone gets their hand chopped off. This film killed half the fucking cast, man.
That's why it was cool. Because I remember watching Infinity War going, this is fucking outstanding, right? And then, because I think I was actually recovering from an operation when it came out. I'm not sure. But,
okay, well, yeah.
Yeah. And so this is my first right back to, oh, yes, we got to see this film.
4 years ago?
Yeah. So I'm like, cool. And when, at the end, I was like, I didn't realize, anyone who knows script and stuff like that and writing a trilogy knows that the Dark One is in the middle, right? So I still thought well, everyone was going to win. I still thought that Thor was going to actually take him out. And he stabbed, and he fucking throws the thing and he kills him. And I'm like, what up? We're going
to
do this.
I just thought we'd retreat to our corners and start again. I thought that's how the film was going to end. I didn't expect there to be wiping out half the cast.
Yeah, and them playing that card and doing it so effectively. I remember seeing, walking out of this film after going, like, there's people tweeting or fucking, like they basically their hearts sank and they cried at the end of Infinity War because they couldn't believe
it. Anyone who didn't feel anything where Tom Holland dies.
Oh, yeah.
Has no fucking soul.
Yeah, I know. That was cool. And that's why it worked, man. So that's like, number two, number one. They're interchangeable, bro. This thing, like you said, because it was such a big deal, it was 10 years worth of shit or whatever, you know?
At that stage, 10 years. At that stage, 100%.
Like, fuck, this is so
good. And again, if you want to compare in those numbers, we're talking 4 years versus 10. So.
And you know what? In my old age now, I've actually looked at the third one and gone, yeah, because the third one is a very different movie, Endgame. And it had to be. Yeah, Endgame had to be a different movie. And I was frankly fine with the fact that this was a long one, but I liked it. I was feeling it had room.
Yeah, look, I will die on the hill that says Infinity War is a better film than Endgame.
Absolutely. Pound for pound, it is a better film. The end of Civil War, I still feel it earns that ending because that's the one where people cheer and shit.
Civil War or Endgame?
Sorry, Endgame.
Endgame's ending is amazing. It just takes too long to make its point and get to where it wants to get to.
I understand. But it was an emotional piece, that one, with a big Marvel ending. So, yeah, all mine. But, yeah, there you go. Infinity War, man. Infinity War.
There we are. My number one, Wayne's number two, flipped around with Usual Suspects for both of our lists. Yeah, let's run it through, Wayne. Give it back to the audience.
You go.
Okay, I'll go first. Number 10, Funny Games, Michael Haneke's film. Number 9, No Country for Old Men. 8, Hereditary. 7, Arlington Road. Number 6 is 7. Number 5 is Fallen. 4, Basic Instinct. 3, Saw. 2, The Usual Suspects. Number 1, Avengers, Infinity War.
My number 10 is The Cabin in the Woods. 9, The Talented Mr. Ripley. 8, The Vanishing, original one. 7, Unbreakable. 6, Fight Club. 5, Memento. 4, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. 3, Arlington Road. 2, Infinity War. And one was, of course, The Usual Suspects.
So what do we have? 1, 2, 3 crossovers?
I think so, yeah. That's kind of cool.
Hmm. Less than I would have thought, to be brutally honest. Any honorable mentions that have not been mentioned, Wayne?
Yeah, Silence of the Lambs, yep. Primal Fear, Watchmen.
Ooh, yeah. Someone called you out there saying, if Wayne doesn't have Watchmen on the list, he's selling out.
You know what? I almost put it on there. And that was the only reason that I didn't put it on is because Watchmen is the comic, and I'd read the comic before. So it's not the movie that was doing this amazing bad ending. It's adapting the comic story. So it is still the movie, but it's the movie of the comic.
We couldn't have Avengers Infinity War on there.
No, Avengers Infinity War is not based. It's not based on a specific comic. It's based on comics characters, right, but it was written for as a screenplay. This was like an adaptation of a comic. So anyway, that doesn't mean it's not right. And by the way, I wanted to ask you this, Paul. I almost put Frailty on this show.
But arguably the good guys win.
Well, here's the thing, and this is why I wouldn't do it, and this is why I probably just went, I don't know. If you put Frailty on a list like this, you are in fact saying that the villain is God. That's what you're saying.
Right? I think what, exactly.
But remember, the way that is parsed the
film,
in the beginning.
The way the film plays out is demons are real, the God killer is real, and doing divine work.
But by the beginning of the film, right? In the beginning of the film, the seemingly innocent young boy sees his dad and his brother doing these horrible things of killing people. And he's like, you can't just kill these people.
But neither of them end up being innocent. Both of them end up being killers.
Yeah. But they're killing for... Like, at the end, basically God is doing all of whatever. You know, he's doing his work. He is killing. But innocent people are dying too. Like the boy. The boy died.
No, he didn't die. No. He died later in life.
Oh, he died later in life. Yes,
after being a killer.
Ah, shit, I forgot about that.
Yep. So I don't think it fits. I looked at it as well.
Yeah. No.
The twist is like, oh, fucking hell, the bad people won. No, arguably in the way the film, and it does because like the footage of the cameras, it blurs out everyone's face. It goes staticky.
So,
so in other words, there is divine intervention
absolutely.
To stop.
Which is why it's so shocking. Yep. So yeah, you're right. So yeah. Yeah, I thought about it, but there you go. Obviously, glad it was off.
Good one to leave off the list, I think. The only one film I mentioned, Empire Strikes Back, was my number 11. 12, The Vanishing. 13, Sinister. Great horror film with Ethan Hawke, directed by Scott Derrickson, who did the first Doctor Strange film. And yes, Cabin in the Woods is my last one.
Nice one.
All right, that's it from us. What about you? Wrap up every episode of the show with your feedback on the topic at hand in the segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Top 10 with Adelaide Spence, Whiplash.
Oh, fuck.
That's a good choice.
Wait, does he win though?
Arguably.
Fuck, it's a good choice.
A Clockwork Orange, and Ex Machina are all top tier picks, they said.
Ah, Ex Machina, good call.
Stephen Croon said 7, The Usual Suspects in Arlington Road, so right there with us.
Nice.
Stephen Byrne said Basic Instinct, 7. And The Usual Suspects again.
Okay.
Sam Hurley from the Movie Review Reviews in 20 Q's podcast has celebrated their 200th episode. Congratulations, fellas, ladies, and all in between. And Sam will be on hopefully sometime in the not too distant future.
Cool.
Guesting on the show. Number 3, Avengers Infinity War. Number 2, Silence of the Lambs. Number 1, there you are, Wayne. Empire Strikes Back.
Ba-bum.
David Power, top level patron, said, whilst Usual Suspects is obviously the GOAT, Use Social Network, number 3, such a villain. Number 2, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the Kaufman version, aliens being the villain. And number 1, Fallen, underrated 1998 Gregory Hoblit supernatural thriller with Danzel.
That really was a good show, wasn't it?
It was great.
Yeah.
Smile Samani, mate to us, said, number 3, Watchmen. Is he a villain, though? Is he really? Well, then why is he on your list, Smiley? For fuck's sake.
It is.
Number two, Brazil falling into madness to escape the reality of the villain. It's very much the system with this one. And number one, The Vanishing, the original 1988 version, Wayne.
Yeah.
For such a slow burn movie, the last 5 minutes was a huge jolt.
Yeah, I shat my pants.
Stuart James, number three, Basic Instinct. Word. Number two, Avengers, colon, Infinity War. Number one, Seven.
Seven. Nice.
Laurie Miller said, Seven again. What's in the box? According to the way she wrote it. Number two, Silence of the Lambs. Number one, the same bad guy in both, The Omen and Rosemary's Baby.
Sam Neill? Oh, no, The Devil.
The Devil.
The Devil, sorry.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Worth it. The whole episode just became worth it. Kristen Arcaro said, Avengers, colon, Infinity War, Seven, and Gone Girl, Amy Elliott, done forever. And I went, message to Kristen's partner.
Yeah.
Running gif.
Exactly.
She said, it's a bone of contention in her house.
Oh, shit.
Hubby is well aware.
Oh, Amy's a cunt. Sorry, anyway, go.
Jason Barr said, Skyfall. The villain wins?
No. No, you got, have you bad him?
Hmm.
No, he gets,
I guess.
He gets fucked up, man. He gets killed.
M?
No, James Bond throws a fucking knife at his ass.
It still kills Judi Dench, right?
Yeah, I don't say he's win. If he won, he'd kill Bond.
Yeah, okay. Right. Clockwork Orange and Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Will Scaife said, Old Boy. That's a good choice from 2003.
Old Boy. Oh, shit. That's a good one.
Good one.
By the way, Billy Scaife, anniversary. Oh, just
congratulations on the wedding anniversary there.
My man.
Yes. And Martyrs, the French film, which, yep.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, yeah.
And No Country for Old Men.
Okay.
And then the last one, John Huslander says, number three, Fallen. Movie with a good use of voiceover at the end. Totally agree. Number two, The Last Seduction. And I'm not just saying that because of Linda Fiorentino, but
shit, that's a good one too. Yep. That's a good one too.
Damn. Number one, The Vanishing. Not the Joel Butler movie. Not the Kiefer Sutherland one. The 1988 Dutch movie. Such an unsettling villain. There you are, Wayne.
My man.
Awesome choice for you, sir. And that's it for this week's episode of The Countdown, episode 365. Thank you so much for joining us. Wayne, how do the good folk get in touch with us or give us their feedback on the show?
We Google The Countdown Podcast and find all our socials. Send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com or visit thecountdownpodcast.com.
How have you not got this yet?
Because I have
fucking visit the site.
Visit the site. Yes, I've got to go and do some work on that. So maybe don't visit that until I get to the other things.
Oh my
but definitely
God.
Hit us up on
He's only had 2 months.
It's only been, 2 months. That's...
Well, like, what do you want from me, Wall? it took me fucking 15 months to produce a video for the show. You dickhead.
I don't see the confusion.
There's only one villain here, Paul, and it's you. Look, we'll let you know what's happening next week. There's a couple of things that have to come together. It will either be top 10 vampire films or top 10 remakes. We'll let you
we'll work on it.
No. And that's it from us today. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Suck my dick.
Holy hell, son, your butter's useful as a cock-flavored lollipop.
Cock-flavored.
And so is your dick. We'll catch you next time. See ya.
See ya.
For the recount, let's get into it then proper. On the other side of this music cue, the top 10 films where the villain won. Triumphed. Was victorious. Overcame all the odds. Was the best around. Should I stop?
Womped ass.
King dicked.
Took names. Fingered
Swept
heavily.
All before them. Fingered heavily? What the fuck does that mean?
Just, you're walking through the crowd of armies and you're just fingering guys' assholes and they fall. It's just, that's how some people fight ball.
You're thinking about everything everywhere all at once again.
Yeah.
The little finger
pinky,
thing.
Pinky. Oh, shit.